Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Tetzayin Amud Bet by the two dots. Boirova. Tzorich Shia the Malkot, or Ein Tzorich Shia the Malkot. Do you need to have a tearing or a certain amount of time in which you do not exit the Mikdash when you are Tamei in order to be Chayav Malkot? Or is there no such requirement with regards to Malkot? Now, the question the Gemara is going to parse a little bit here, which is the Korban Gemire Shia. The din of Shia is applicable by a korban, the korban olev v'yored. L'malkot lo gmirei Shia. On the other hand, when it comes to malkot, we don't have such a mesora, we don't have such a connection between the two items. Odilma bifnim gmirei Shia. It has to do with being inside the Azara. Lo shna lo korban, lo shna lo malkot. Makes no difference whether it's a korban or malkot. And the Gemara leaves this as a teku. So first of all, we have to take a step back, because the Gemara is going to continue and ask questions in this nature and understand what the Gemara is looking for over here. But the Rishonim point out, see that there's two Balei Tosafot on Yudzayin Amud Aleph that reference back to this Gemara. Seems to be that some of the Rishonim had this girsa of the Gemara later on in the Gemara, not over here. But the nature of the question is not if a person becomes Tamei in the Azara. If you become Tamei in the Azara intentionally, there's no question you get Malkot right away. Someone says to you, don't touch that, you're going to be Tamei in the Azara, and you'll be in violation of Below Yitamut Machanehem, then you're going to get Malkot right away. But that's not the nature of the question, because that seems obvious. Here you're actively violating an isur. Someone's warning you not to do it. Why should there be any shihiyah? What does the delay or the tearing have to do with it? The question really arises, and this is the way that some of the Rishonim explain it, is in a case where the person became Tamei Bishogeg. They didn't know that they were Tamei. Then they become Tamei. Then they become aware of being Tamei, and then they intentionally don't exit the Azara. So, as opposed to by a korban, where the person is a shogeg all the way through, they became tamei b'shogeg, and then they do the wrong thing in exiting. They take the longer road instead of the shorter road out. So that's a case where you're shogeg through and through. And over there, the Gemara told us that there is a requirement of shihiyah. You have to have a certain amount of tearing or delay in order to be chayav the korban. In the case where you have an intentional delay or tearing, over there is that same requirement of shihiyah exists. So that's one way to phrase the question, which is, the Gemara wants to know now, if a person became Tamei Bishogeg, and then someone tells them, you gotta leave right away, if you don't leave right away, you're gonna be in violation, are they in violation immediately when they refuse to leave? Or do they have that same window, which is the Shihiyah, only if they delay or tarrying and they're leaving after refusing to leave, are they gonna get Malkot? So that's one way to phrase the question. The Balei Tosafot actually suggests over here, that the question has to do with the fact that this is a lav she'ein bo maaseh. As opposed to when you become tamei intentionally in the Azara, which is you actively go and touch something, and there you would think that you get malkot no matter what because you actively did something wrong. Over here, the person's already tamei. He became tamei b'shogeg. Now when he tarries, his tarrying is a lav she'ein bo maaseh. So that's the question of the Gemara over here. Is such a lav she'ein bo maaseh, does that get Malkot or does that not get Malkot? That's how the Tosafot phrases the question over here, which is that this is an issue for those that believe that you don't get Malkot for the Lav She'ein Bo Maaseh. And the question is it deemed a Maaseh? By the Korban, we say that the delay or the tearing is deemed a Maaseh, enough so that you are a Chayav a Korban for your Shogeg, or being a Shogeg in that case, for Korban Oleh V'Yoreid. So do we say that the Malkot are similar to the korban, and therefore shiya will be deemed a maaseh? Is that enough of a maaseh, or deemed maaseh, for you to be chayav malkot? Or is this considered to be a lav she'ein bo maaseh, and therefore you would not be chayav in this case? So that's the nature of the Gemara's question over here. Tosafot then entertains another possibility, which is that the question here is not about malkot at all, but rather about iser malkot. It's whether you violate the iser or you don't violate the iser. Tosafot here spends a lot of time comparing it to the case of kilayim, by which a person is chayav v'kilayim when he normally puts on and takes off a beged, and there Rav Ashi qualifies that and says he doesn't have to physically put it on and take it off, he just has to wait that amount of time between putting on and taking it off, and if he waits that amount of time, if he continues to wear the kilayim, he's going to be chayav. And so then Tosafot says that that is a similar type of question over here, which is the person's already in violation of an isur. The question is now, when is it considered to be a new violation? When do you now enter into an area of new violation? Is that similar to Kilayim, where the waiting itself is enough either to be deemed a Maiseh, to get you Malkot, or even if you believe that it's not deemed a Maiseh, maybe this is according to one who says, Lav Shein Bo Maiseh Lokin Alav, but then do you have this requirement of Shihiyah, or a requirement of some sort of tearing, in order for now to become a new violation? Or is the violation immediate in nature? But then, according to that, Tosfot says, even if you don't need Shihiyah over here, you'd have to be at least Kedei Yitziyah V'Knisa. You would have to actually tarry the amount of time it would take you to leave and come back in before we would be Mechayev you a second time or multiple times for the same violation. But Tosfot says the question of Kedei Shihiyah in that context would be just on top of the normal amount of time that you have to wait in order to deem it a new violation. Do you have to wait Kedei Shihiyah on top of that? So again, Tosafot plays around with different possible formulations as to what the question is over here. The Rimi Gash has an interesting way of formulating the question, which is simply the person was walking out and bowed down on the way out. So again, we said yesterday, when you bow down on the way out, you need a Kedei Shihiyah, because of the fact that bowing down on your way out is not called bowing down. That's Rashi explained over there, because you only bow towards the Kodesh, not away from the Kodesh. So then you're not in violation because today Hishtachavah, you need a Shiyah. And the question of the Gemara here is that Shiyah also required with regards to Malkot? Person bows down on their way out. Is that enough to be Mechayev you? Or is there also this standard of today Shiyah on the way out for Malkot? And that would then determine whether you're Chayav just for simply bowing down, or you're only Chayav if you bow down and have in that period of time have a Kedei Shihiyah. Right, so now the Gemara asks, Boy Roba, Tala Atzmo Ba'avir Azara Mahu. Person hangs himself into the airspace of the Azara. What is the din? So Rashi says over here, Tala Atzmo Ba'avir Kedei Shihiyah. He's hanging out there the amount of time that it's a Kedei Shihiyah. Is he in violation? Ki gemire shihiyah, shihiyah debat hishtachavo. When we spoke about shihiyah, there we spoke about shihiyah that can result in a bowing down. Delavat hishtachavo. But if you have a delay or a tearing that can't result in a bowing down, lo gemire, that's not part of this din. Adilma bifnim shihiyah gemire. Or maybe it just has to do with being inside the azara. Lo shna debat hishtachavo. Makes no difference whether you can or cannot bow down. Teku. So over here, again, let's break the question down into a number of parts. The first of which is what the Gemara parses the question to be, which is, how closely connected is the shi'ur of Kedei Hishtachava to the actual violation? Is Kedei Hishtachava simply a measurement of time? And so that's what we want to know. How much time do you need to tarry in order to be chayav? Irrespective of where you are. It means whether you're on the ground or you're in the air, doesn't really matter. Or is there something inherent in Kedei Hishtachava in determining the time period? It's not simply the time of Kedei Hishtachava, but you must be in a place where you can do Hishtachava, positioned to do the Hishtachava. Even if you never do it, you have to have a potential to be able to do it. That is the halacha of Kedei Hishtachava. So that's the question that the Gemara is parsing is, how closely connected is the delay or the tarry to the Kedei Hishtachava? Just a simple measure of time? Or is there something inherently important about the Kedei Hishtachava? We had a similar thing yesterday with regards to the Pasuk that we quoted. The Gemara brings a Pasuk to determine the span of time that it takes for Kedei Hishtachava with the Shihiyah. So there, Machok, it was the whole Pasuk or half the Pasuk. But they picked a Pasuk that specifically speaks about bowing down in the Mikdash. So again, did they just pick a Pasuk that had that right length of time, had that number of words in it? Or the Pasuk itself has meaning because of the fact that it speaks about Kriya and Hakra'a. And so therefore it's not just a random Pasuk, it's a Pasuk that speaks to the issue that we're dealing with. And similarly over here, the Kedei Hishtachava, how integral is that to the violation? So that's the nature of the question. Then you have to take a step back and ask, what are the two sides of the question? Over here you have a machloket, Rimi Gash, Tosfot the Rosh, as to what are the two sides. It could be that either you're chayav patur, or chayav and chayav. Question could be, are you chayav immediately, or are you only chayav after Kedei Shihiyah? So that's the two sides of the question. Does Shihiyah apply when you're in the Avir? Then the answer is, yes, it does apply. That means you won't be chayav until you have that tearing. If it doesn't apply, you're chayav right away, because you're in a space that is problematic. The other way to formulate the question is chayav and patur, which is that If you require a shiyah, that means that you will be chayav after you tarry that amount. If shiyah is not applicable here, you're going to be patur legamrei, because there's no obligation in that space, meaning that the k'day shachvah is not applicable, and therefore the whole restriction is not applicable. I think that's a much harder formulation, and that's why other rishonim say that it's a chayav and chayav, just a question of how immediately you are chayav. Now, there are two ways also, again, to look at the question itself over here, which is he be'avir? And that's the question. The question of the Gemara is very fundamental. Is there a chiyuv tuma be'avir, or is there no chiyuv tuma be'avir? And the question is the avir azara nitkadesh, or is the avir the azara lo nitkadesh? Could be a very, very fundamental question that the Gemara is asking over here, which is, when you're in the airspace, what is your status? Nothing to do with being in airspace. It's the airspace of the Azara in particular. What is the din there? Irrespective of Kadesh Shia, Lo Kadesh Shia. That might be the nature of the Gemara's question. Bali Tosafot don't like that, because they say that that is a discussion that happens other places in Shas. And the Gemara concluded in other places that the Avir is Nitkadesh. So then why is the Gemara asking a question about something that we've already concluded somewhere else? That in itself may not be a question, because we do find that many times the Gemara opens up a sugya that it dealt with somewhere else, or even seemingly concluded somewhere else. It opens it up because it doesn't accept the answer. It doesn't accept what was said there. So that is one way to have the formulation. I think you can see it in the Rabbeinu Chananel. Adam Tamei, Shetalat Smo Ba'avir Azara, Im Chayav Mishum Tamei Mikdash, Odima Kem Dolo Naga, Lav. So you can see that the Rabbeinu Chananel is asking that as a very, very fundamental question. It's not a question about Kadesh Shia alone. It's a much more fundamental question about whether the Avir of the Azara is Mitameh or the Avir is not Mitameh. Tosva brings, it is farm de garse Avir Azara ki Azara dami olo. So if you have that girsa, which seemingly might have been the girsa of Rashi, there it's very explicit, like the Rabbeinu Chananel, that the question is about the Avir itself. And that's what Tosafot doesn't like. And therefore he says, V'nirak Girsat Asfarim, the Gar Seki Gemire Shihia, Heche Debar Hishtachavahu, which is closer to the Girsa that we have in our Gemara, that the question is not about whether Avir is or is not Kadosh. That already, he says, is determined in the Gemara in Zvachim, and it's conclusive over there. And so here the Gemara's question is not about whether yes or no. It's the question is, we know you are. How long does it take before you become Chayav for being in that airspace of the Mikdash? What are the requirements? Do you have the Kadei Yishtachavaya or don't have the Kadei Yishtachavaya? Alright, again here, the Gemara leaves this as unresolved as a teiku. Alright, so now the Gemara moves on to the next question. Rashi says over here that it is an im timsalomar. Right, that has ramifications in a number of manners. Boy Rabashi, timei atzmo b'mezid, mahu. A person made himself tamei intentionally. What is the din? So Rashi says over here, v'im timsalomar, tzarich shi'iyah, l'malkot, bitumat ones. If you need to have a shi'iyah when you became tamei unintentionally or accidentally, so what Rashi is saying, go back to the original question. That's what I said to you before. Seems to be that the order of the questions might have been different. Rashi sees this as a continuation of the first question we asked on the previous amud, with whether you need shi'iyah l'malkot. So it would seem that they had the girsa where shi'iyah l'malkot, that question was asked, and then this question was immediately afterwards, and maybe even one of the reason why the Tosafot are found on this amud that deal with that question. So now he says that if you say before that we asked the question by malkot, do you need shi'iyah or you don't need shi'iyah? Over there were two parts to the puzzle, as we explained. You became tamei unintentionally or accidentally, and then the question was that you tarried, and you tarried intentionally. Is shi'iyah required in that case or not required? So now Rashi says, if you conclude that shi'iyah is relevant in that case, what happens if the person becomes tamei b'mezid? And that's the nature of the question according to Rashi. B'shi'iyat mezid b'tuma, tumat mezid mi ba'i shi'ala. If you become intentionally tamei, then are you then chayav immediately? Or is there a shi'iyah? Where Rashi reads it. Again, the reason that has ramification is, first of all, the Rambam says that whenever the Gemara does an imtim salomar, that means that it included with the previous case that that should be the halacha, even though it left it unresolved in the previous statement. So that would have ramifications, as well as the nature of the question over here, which is, according to Rashi, the question is, when you become tamei intentionally bifnim, maybe there is a din of shihiyah, which, again, I said before, doesn't seem to make so much sense, because there, you're intentionally doing a maiseh, that makes you tame. By Rashi, tame atzmo b'mezit mahu. Ba'ones gemirei shiya. When it comes to this din of shiya, that's when you unintentionally or accidentally became tame. B'mezit lo gemirei shiya. If you intentionally become tame, there's nothing to speak about because you intentionally became tame. The shiya is all about unintentional consequences. Odilma bifnim gemirei. Or maybe it has to do with anything in the Azara has this shi'ur associated with it, and therefore gemirei shi'iya. Anything inside the Azara has that. Lo shna ba'ones, lo shna b'mezid. Makes no difference in how you became tamei, whether you unintentionally or accidentally became tamei, or intentionally became tamei, teku. Now again here, the nature of the question is somewhat difficult, because I told you before, and I still think it's the case, that if a person intentionally becomes tamei, there's no question that he violated the Isser immediately. Why would you have to have a Kadei Shiya? Doesn't make so much sense to argue for Kadei Shiya when the person is doing something that clearly abrogates the sanctity of the Azara by intentionally become tamei. It's one thing to speak about it when he unintentionally or accidentally became tamei, and now he's trying to leave. And so then you have to speak about what is the time period in which he has to leave. What are the violations? Meaning that when are you in violation? There you could speak about Shiya. But in coming into contact with Tumah, it doesn't make so much sense. If you look at the Tosafot, it says it very succinctly. It says, Sarach lomar, b'sha shitimei atzmo lo yada shaya b'migdash. So he creates a scenario by which the Tumah, or intentional becoming Tamei, is not in a mindset where he's in violation. So he says, yes, you became Tamei b'mezid, but you did it when you didn't remember you were in the Migdash. So the engagement with the Tumah is intentional, but it's not that you violated it immediately because you forgot that you were in the Mikdash. So the Shogeg has got to do with the Mikdash. So he parses the case to avoid this problem or this logical problem. He says, if he did it intentionally, he knew about it, and he did it intentionally, and then he forgets afterwards, lo michayev korban. There's no way you can be a chayev a korban. That's not someone who is coming back or returning from his idea. There's no forgetting here that took place. He did everything intentionally, and then he forgets about it. That's not called a lama. V'i l'malkot, b'i, tzarich lamar, d'lo hitru bo, el'alachar shittimei at atzmo. So Tosfot says, well, if the question is at the shogeg level, he says it has to be that there's some sort of shikha here that makes it that the intentional tuma is not enough to render it impossible for you to bring the korban. And he says, if it is a question about mezid, that he says, you have to be here, that they didn't warn him until after he already became tameh. So now, even though the violation took place immediately when he touched the item, the mezid, nevertheless, in terms of malkot, he's not going to get malkot from that because he lacked hatra'ah. Hatra'ah only happened after he was tameh, and he is tarrying now. And the question is the tarrying necessary when you became tameh b'mezid? Dim hitru bo kodem lo b'yishihya. Tosfot says it's a given, which I said to you before, that if he intentionally becomes tamei in the Mikdash after being warned not to do that, there's no reason to believe that you need a shi'iya in that case. So Tosfot gives you two possibilities about what the nature of the question is. Intentional tumah, and then question is, can you bring a korban from that intentional tumah? So Tosfot reworks the mezid there to really be a shogeg in some senses, which is he intentionally becomes tamei but forgets he's in the Mikdash. He just changes the halama from a halamat tuma to a halamat migdash, or from an unintentional encounter with tuma to an intentional encounter with tuma, but you forget about the migdash. Or he says, if it's b'mezid, it's in a situation in which you wouldn't have gotten malkot for that intentional engagement with the tuma because you lacked hatra'ah in that case. And the hatra'ah is only given to you after you came into contact with the tuma. So now we're dealing with a different problem. We're dealing not with the contact with the tuma, we're dealing with the tarrying in the migdash post the contact with the Tuma. So that's the nature of the Gemara's question over here. Although the Ritva wants to suggest over here that it's a case where he did become Tamei B'mezid and knew everything B'mezid, violated B'mezid, but then he regrets what he did. So in essence, he's doing Tshuva, and then he forgets about the fact that he became Tamei. Now he enters into the world of Shia, and that's Gemara's question. Is Shia relevant for this individual who became Tamei through Mezid, even though he's regretted it since? Nevertheless, he became Tamei B'mezid. And the question is, does Shia have relevance in that case? Although again, that's much more far-fetched to say that he was B'mezid Tamei, then Mitkare, then forgot about it, and now he's violating B'shogeg to be Chayav a Korban. And again here, the Gemara leaves it as a Teiku. In all these questions, the Gemara is trying to clarify the extent of this Kadesh Shehiya. How deeply embedded in the violation is this Kadesh Shehiya? Is the Kadesh Shehiya something specifically allocated to the Korban and specifically allocated to being on the ground of the Azara? Or does it have a more expansive capture in the Kadesh Shehiya, which means that it is something that's to deal with this halacha in general? Is this halacha in general governed by Kadesh Shehiya? And then if I have applications, even in places you wouldn't have thought, for instance, in the airspace, or in cases where you started out with Mezid, issues where you wouldn't have thought Kadesh Shehiya is relevant, it still applies, because it applies to any Tumah in the Mikdash, or is Kadesh Shehiya very specific to the case in which a person unintentionally became Tamein is exiting the Mikdash, and Kadesh Shehiya is just a measurement of exiting the Mikdash. So now, Boi Rav Ashi, Nazir Bekever Boi Shehiya the Malkot, Nazir has a very similar issue, which is that a Nazir is not allowed to become Tameh, and if he is in a place of Tumah, he has to get himself out of that place of Tumah. So here you have a Nazir that, Bekever, he was inside of a cemetery. Rashi claims he got there in a box, and so he wasn't becoming Tameh because he was inside this Ohel or this box, and his good friend came along and opened up the box for him and therefore made him Tameh in the Kever. So now he's in a bind. He came into the Tumah unintentionally. He wasn't thinking about becoming Tameh over here, but now he is. And now what does he do? Does he have to exit? If someone tells him now, you must exit the Kever, you must exit the cemetery, if he does not exit, he refuses to exit, is he in violation immediately? Or does he have the same dispensation as in by the Mikdash, which is your only violation if you tarry longer than Kadesh Shehiya? Bifnim Gemirei Shehiya. Do we only say that Bifnim, inside of the Mikdash, Kadesh Shehiya is relevant? Bachutz Lo Gemirei Shehiya. Shehiya is not relevant outside of the Mikdash. Odilma Bonis Gemirei Shehiya. That it has to do with how you came into contact with the Tumah. The question is Kadesh Shehiya just a governing rule when you unintentionally or accidentally came into Tumah? Loshna bifnim, loshna bichutz. Doesn't matter if it's internally or externally, meaning whether it's in the Azara or not. Teku. Again here, the question relates to the extent of this Kadesh Shehiya. How particular is Kadesh Shehiya to the Mikdash and to the Azara? Or is Kadesh Shehiya just simply a measurement of expedience? How fast do you get out of the problem that you are in? And so it's a measurement, again, of time. It's a measurement of whether you really are abrogating the restriction against becoming Tamei or not. And if that's the case, you can use it or utilize it even in situations outside the Azara. Or is Kadesh Tachavaya, again, integrally connected to the Mikdash, because that's a place where you bow down. And since that's a place where you bow down, that is the measurement, or that is a dispensation there. It doesn't apply to other places. Now, couple of things about this. First of all, Rashi says over here, Korban lo shayich hocha. The Gemara asks a question with Malkot, and not a question about the Korban, because the Korban is not relevant by the Nazir. But as Rashi himself notes, that's not true. A Nazir that becomes Tameh when he is a Nazir brings the Korbanot Tumah. So then, what do you mean the Korban's not relevant over here? Maybe the Chiyuv of the Korbanot only is triggered after Kadesh Shehiya, not before that point in time. So Rashi says that's not the issue. Korban Nazir Tameh, Lav Avon Tumah Ate. Says it's not connected to the violation of the Tumah. Ela Lemechel Alei Nizirut Tahara. It is the trigger for restarting the new Nizirut. It's a Makshir for the Nizirut B'Tahara, and not a Kapara for the Nizirut B'Tumah, or the fact that the Nazir became Tameh. If you remember, we had that back on Daf Chet Amud Aleph, when the Gemara was speaking about Chataot over there, and Kapara v'chataot, and it spoke about a Yoledet and a Nazir. And Rashi said the same thing over there. Below the whole Tumatam, v'chim mighty Nazir Korban, mechal alei Nizirut Torah mighty. Again, he says the same thing. The reason a Nazir brings a Korban, Tumah, is not because of his Tumah, but rather to start his Tara. V'izir l'Hashem et yemei Nizro v'yamim harishonim yiplu, v'gzeirat ha-katuvu, d'lo chay le Nizirut, that the mighty Korban. He says it's simply a gzeirat ha-katuv that you can't start the new Nizirut until you bring the Korban. Even if you come Tahor, your Nizirut doesn't start until you bring those Korbanot. And so therefore, these Korbanot are not relevant to the Tumah. So Rashi says any discussion regarding Korban and Korban Tumah by the Nazir is not a relevant question. And that's why the Gemara asks the question in Malkot, by the Nazir, not by Korban, because that's the only place that Tum'ah is relevant by the Nazir. That's number one. The second thing that Tabali Tosfot over here note, that the discussion about this sugya in the Gemara in Nazir revolves around whether a Nazir's Tum'ah, what happens if you have additional Tum'ah after that? The Tabali Tosfot say that the Gemara in Nazir deals with the issue of whether a Nazir can become more Tamei. If a Nazir is already Tamei, Tum'ah Tamei, does then becoming Tum'ah Tamei again an additional violation? Or does that really matter anymore? Once he's Tamei Mate, is it relevant whether it becomes more Tamei, Tum'ah Tamei? So Tosfot there discusses a difference between Tum'ah Bichiburim and Tum'ah Shelo Bichiburim, which is depending on how he's becoming Tamei. Is he becoming Tamei because he's in an area which makes him Tamei, or is he in direct contact with the Tum'ah? And maybe being in direct contact with the Tum'ah is a higher level of Tum'ah. And maybe that's the only time that the Nazir is in restriction or violation, when he is increasing the Tum'ah or the level of the Tum'ah, not when it's on a level with his Tum'ah. Or you have to say here that it's a situation in which you believe, like the Mandomar in Nazir, that becoming Tamei on a recurring basis is problematic. That even if he is already Tamei, becoming Tamei again is problematic, and you're going to have to explain this sugya here in the same way, which is that this is a problem because he already became Tamei. He's in the Kever. He's already Tamei, Tum'ah Tamei. His tarrying there, what does that make a difference? Why does it matter that he tarries at this point in time? He already has broken his Nizirut, and he has to now go through a process of Taran, restart his Nizirut. So either it's like the Mandomar, again, that it is a problem of additional Tum'ah, even if you're already Tamei, or it's the Mandomar that Tum'ah b'chiburim is problematic, and here he's increasing the level of Tum'ah through Tum'ah b'chiburim in some way. He's touching the Kever, he's doing something that increases the level of Tum'ah Tameit that is associated over here. Right now, Balu Baroka Chayav Viktsara Patur. He goes out the longer way, he's Chayav. He goes out the shorter way, he's Patur. So now we have a question. Amar Rava, Kitsara Shamru. This shorter way that we're going out, Afilu Akev Vitzad Gudal. That even means if he walks out heel to toe, toe to heel, Afilu Kolayom Kulo. Even if it takes the entire day to leave. What Rava says over here, this is important, it does have halachic ramifications, is this is not a time sequence. It's not telling you how long, it's telling you the distance you need to cover in order to get out of here. As long as you're not tarrying and you're covering that distance, then you are patur because you're going out the shortest way possible, even if it takes you all day to get out. So you could have read this, that the question was the issue of tzara and arukah is not an issue of distance, it's an issue of time. You need to exit in the shortest time possible, and that is the derech tzara. And you'll be governed by that derech tzara. You have to get out in that amount of time. Now that will open up the possibility, which the Gemara will ask in 1 second, which is if you go the longer way, but get out in the same speed as you would have done the shorter way. So the Gemara will ask that question, but that is not what Rava says. Rava says it's not a time threshold, that's not the governing factor here, it's a distance threshold. And as long as you're moving out, we're fine with that. But that means, according to Rava, at least you would have thought that if he goes the longer way and takes him less time, he's going to be chayav just because he took the longer way out. Dubai Rava. Shiyot mahu shiitztarfu. If a person tarries along the way, are they mitztaref? We know what the threshold for shihiya is, which is kedei histachava. What happens if he goes, stops a little bit, goes, stops a little bit, goes, stops a little bit? Is the Kedei Shiyah have to be all at one time? Or can you add up all the Kedei Shiyot that you delay or tarry on your way out? Tifshilo Mididik. Mar says, why don't you answer from his own point? Over there he says you can walk slowly. You can put one foot in front of the other and go out. That makes it sound like the Shiyot are not mitzareit. As long as you're moving, every time you move, then you basically erase the previous Shiyah that was there. So Mar says, what do you mean? Hatam de lo shah. He never mentioned anything about tarrying. He said you were in motion the whole time. You're just walking slowly, but you're in motion. So you can't prove anything from Rava's statement before. Rava's statement before just says as long as you're in motion and you're going there, tzara, you are patur. This question is a separate question, which is, if you go out and then you stop, go out, stop, go out and stop, what's the din? So by mine, abaye mi rabo. So by here now queries of rabo. It's very interesting, Rashi over here. Rashi says, anytime in Shas you see by mine, abaye, then the next Amor that's mentioned is going to be Rabo and not Rava. Rava is Abaye's peer. Rabba is one of Abaye's Rebbeim. Rabba and Rabbi Yosef are his Rebbeim. Most times in Shas, Abaye Mine, Abaye Mine, Rabbi Yosef. But it also we find many times, Abaye Mine, Rabba. So Rashi says over here, anytime you have this structure, Abaye Mine, Abaye, you know the gears afterwards is Mi Rabba and not Mi Rabba. He's asking a question of his Rebbe. Balo Baruka, Shir Kitzara, Mau. If he goes out the long way, but he does it in the amount of time it takes to do the shortest way, what is the din? Shi'ur gemire is the shi'ur, exactly that. It is a threshold of time in which you need to exit. B'chi balo baruka shir k'tzara patur. And therefore, if you go the longer way, but do it in a manner that is so fast, that is the equivalent of going out the short way, you'll be patur. The Rishonim say, when we say going derech k'tzara, shir k'tzara, they're saying, what would a normal average person take to go out that way? Odilma davka gemire aruka chayav k'tzara patur. Or, is it specific to the distance that you are traversing? And so the shiur is a shiur in distance, not a shiur in time. So that's the nature of the question. So, Rabbi doesn't do what Shaul suggests over here, which is, according to Rabba, we know what the answer is, because Rabba already told us it's all about distance, not about time. If that's the case, we should be conclusive, at least in Rabba's position, that that's the case here as well. That it's all about distance, not time. If you go the Arukah, even if you do it fast, you're going to be a Chayav. Gemara doesn't say that. For that reason, there are Rishonim. Like the Rimi Gash says that you can't answer for Rava in that way, because over here, you could bifurcate the question and say it in the following manner, that both of these would be acceptable according to Rava. All Rava is saying is if you take the shortest route, you're not going to be a Chayav. No matter how long it takes you, you take the shortest route, that is a dispensation. But maybe there are two dispensations here. The two dispensations are, take the shortest route, no matter how long it takes you, or the amount of time it takes you to take the shortest route. So you could argue that even knowing Rava's din, you could still ask this question according to Rava, and maybe that's why the Gemara does not bring up Rava's shita over here. Amalei, lo nitna arukah li dachot etzlo. Arukah doesn't matter. Arukah is arukah, you are chayav, and that means that it's all about the distance that you traverse. It is not about the time. Even if you do it fast, then it doesn't matter over here. So now the basic answer is, then you're going to make it very subjective. Which is all of a sudden you're going to have some guys going out the long way being chayav, some guys going out the long way being patur. That's the way the Rabbeinu Chananel says it over here. He says, Klomar, kule ama chayav, bab is patur. What are you going to say? Everybody else is chayav when he goes out the arukah way and this guy is patur? We don't create subjective halakhot. The answer is, you go out the long way, you're chayav, you go out the short way, you are patur. It doesn't matter how fast you go out, or how slow you go out. The answer is, arukah and k'tzara are the determining factor. And so Rabba basically answers similar to Rava, probably where Rava got it also, maybe from his Rebbe Rabba, which is the fact that it is the distance that matters. Now this has implications in other areas of halakha. Just going to bring it up, just to whet your appetite. But we have this with regards to halachot that are brought up. There are a series of halachot, three halachot that are brought together. It's found in the Gemara in Brachot. It's found in Nidah in Chulin. Gemara brings these three halachot together, which is, how far does one have to travel in order to wash their hands for Netilat Yadayim? And then the other halacha that's brought there is with Tfilah. It's not clear there. It's Machlok Rishonim, what it's about. But let's assume that it's about how far you have to go to get to a minyan. And so the Gemara there says, to get to a minyan, you have to go 4 mil. If it's in the direction you're traveling, and you'll have to go 1 mil achora. If you're going backwards or out of your way, you have to go back 1 mil. Over there, you have the same question, which is, the gedder that the Gemara is giving, are they giving you a gedder of distance, or are they giving you a gedder of time? And that will have huge nafkamino today. The Ber Halacha himself brings in Siman Kuf Samech Gimel, with regards to Netilat Yadayim, Im Gamla Parcha. If he has a flying camel, then the governing factor over here is time and not distance. And he says you have to go. He says 4 mil is 72 minutes. That means that you have to travel 72 minutes. Huge nafkamina today for a car. If you're in a car and you're traveling somewhere, how far do we demand of you to go traveling in order to get to a minyan? If you say it's just 4 mil is the distance, then you have a perimeter around where you are, and that perimeter will determine how far you have to travel to get there. Or is it governed by the amount of time in their data it took to traverse 4 mil, which let's assume it's 72 minutes. You have to stay now in the car, travel another 72 minutes, which means that you're going to be traveling anywhere from like 50 to 75 miles beyond where you are right now because that 72 minutes elapsed. So So the Beir Halacha seems to say that it's clear to him that Gam LaParcha, that you have 72 minutes, has nothing to do with distance, all has to do with time. Right? The opposite of the conclusion of the Gemara over here. Whereas there are other poskim that disagree with the Beir Halacha and say it's obvious to them that we're talking about distance and not time. Because otherwise you'll get these ridiculous scenarios by which a person's going to have to travel significant distance in order to reach a minyan or to get to water. So again, here, it's interesting only because that machloka that deals with those other halachot should be influenced by the Gemara over here as well, where the Gemara over here says it's all about distance, not about time. But you could argue that that's unique to this circumstance in the Mikdash, where the distance is the most important factor, not time, because the problem is being in the Mikdash while you are tamei, and therefore we want you going out the shortest way, not the longest way, and that's the objective halacha we're trying to establish here. Maybe the halacha would be different by the taste of washing yadayim or going for water for washing yadayim at tefillah b'tzibur. But just note it because that same, the same question that we're asking here arises over there in the same formulation. Matrivla Rabbi Zeira. Ela dekaim alon, we have a principle, tamei shishimesh b'mita. A tamei that does a voda in the mikdash is chayav mita b'dei shamayim. Hecha mishkachala. How is there a possibility of that being manifest? Igalo shaha, if he did not tarry, hechi avoda, then how did he do avoda in the mikdash? In order to do avoda, you need to stop or you need to do the avoda. Either shaha bar karetu. And if he did tarry to do the avoda, then he's already chayav karet. Karet is a more chamor punishment than mita bidei shamayim. And so, if he's already chayav karet, why are we worrying about mita bidei shamayim? Now, the Rabbeinu Tam asked the obvious question, because if you're chayav karet and mita bidei shamayim, that's different than being just chayav karet. You're chayav karet, you can get malkot and then wipe out the karet. What about mita bidei shamayim being on top of that, which doesn't get wiped out by the malkot? As he says, ikshe Rabbeinu Tam, mabekach imu bar karet. Mikom makom, ikan yafkut atuva. You have many nafkamino, to have a kaimelon, chayve kareto, shalaku nifteru midei kvitadam. Bim batel karet, nishar la mita. Very clear that there is an afkamina. So what that you're chayav karet? So you'll be chayav karet and mita b'dei shamayim. Bo nafkamina, the mita kagon she'ezid b'shimush, tumah b'shagag, b'tumat mikdash. You could have a case where you're mazid in terms of the aboda, and you're a shogeg with regards to the shiyah. So one of them you're chayav a korban for, the other one you're chayav mita b'dei shamayim. He says, I'm not sure I understand why there is a question in the Gemara that, why, how is it that you're chayav karet? And mita b'dei shamayim. He says you could have a case by the tumat mikdash l'shav yechayv a korban. The case of mita b'dei shamayim, there's no korban. So all of these have nafkaminot between them. And why is the Gemara so fixated on the fact that he became chayav karet? The Ramban actually says here, eno chanami. The Gemara could have answered that kuwei, but it came up with a possible scenario that answers the question, even though the answer simply could have been he is chayav karet and chayav mita b'dei shamayim. Whereas the Ritva says that the Lashon and the Gemara and Sanhedrin of Elu Shebemita makes it sound like that's the exclusive punishment that's being met out, that a person who does avoda is only going to be chayav mita b'dei shamayim. If you say that the shiur that we learned is mishkachala, danas nafshe b'ktzara, that he pushed himself to get out faster, vavada buda, and he did avoda in the meantime. If you say that it's a time-bound threshold, then it's easy to understand what happened over here. He went out the shortest way. So he stopped on his way out, did avoda, and then sprinted out. So in totality of time elapsed, he did what an average person would do to leave in the shortest way possible. So when he did that, he's not chayav for tumat mikdash v'kodeshav, but he managed to do avoda by stopping. But that's only if you think that it's a time-bound qualification or threshold. Ela iamar davka gemirei. If you think, like Rabba answered Rabbaye, that it's dafka, meaning it is the distance that you traverse, not the time, hechi mishkachala. What is the scenario in which you're going to have him doing avoda, and yet still be patur from tumat mikdash v'kodeshav? Am Rabbaye, my kushya. Why is it a problem? Mishkachala b'gogon sheba b'ktzara. He walked out the shortest way possible. Bafach b'tzinora. And he flipped something on the mizbeach on the way out. The word tzinora generally is used to mean a pitchfork. And so that was the utensil that he used to flip over the items on the mizbeach. And in doing so, he does avoda on his way out. He doesn't even have to stop. He can do it while he's walking. He flips something on the mizbeach on his way out. Like Rav Huna said, Dam Rav Huna, Zar Shafach B'tzinora Chayav Mita. First of all, we have to agree that whatever he's doing is an avoda. And now we have from Rav Huna. Rav Huna says, if you are non-Kohen and you flip the korbanot that are already on the mizbeach, if you flip them over, you chayev mita, which is zara karev, you mat. A zara does a vote in the mikdash, is subject to a penalty of mita bidei shamayim. And so here, Rav Huna defines that this is classified as a voda and something that's restricted for a zara. Now that we know that, if a person does that on their way out, while they're tamei, a kohen, that does it on his way out, is a kohen shishimesh, he does shimush, he does a voda while he is tamei, so he's going to be chayav for that, but he's exiting in the shortest distance possible. He's walking out the derech tzara'in and never tarries, he never stops. He does it in while in motion, he does it. So gufa. Amar Rav Huna, zasha fach b'tzinua chayav mita. So now let's investigate this. What exactly is he doing that is considered an avoda? He flips the stuff over on the pyre. Why is that an avoda? Hey chidami. Idolo afach lo lo mi'achle. If you tell me if he didn't flip them over, they wouldn't have been consumed by the fire. Pshita. Of course that's considered to be an avoda because he's the one facilitating the korban being burnt on the mizbeach. Vidalo afach lo nami mi'achle. If the korban would have been consumed irrespective of what he does, my kavit, then what did he do? What avoda did he do? It's a question of speed. It would have taken 2 hours for it to be consumed on the pyre had he done nothing. He expedited the consumption of the korban on the pyre by flipping it over. So he did something to facilitate a faster consumption on the fire. And that's the problem over here. That's the avoda he does. So anybody who expedites an avoda, or he causes an avoda to be done in a more expeditious fashion, that's considered to be avoda. And that's why he'll be chayav over here. Amar Boshaya, Be'ina de'ema milta, umistafina mechavraya. Says, I want to say something, I have a drasha, but I'm afraid of my chaverim, what they're going to say to me. Hanichnas, the beit amnuga, derech achurav, a person who walks backwards into a house that has tzorat, filu kulo, and his entire body's in the house, chutz mechotmo, with the exception of his nose, tahor. In that case, it should be tahor, dichtiv, vahaba elabait. The one who comes into the house, derech bia asra Torah. The Torah is oser, walking in a normal fashion, the normal way that you enter into the house. So let's just speak about Rav Hoshaya's din. Rav Hoshaya's din is that if you look at the profile of an individual, the nose of the individual projects outward beyond any part of his body. So now, he is suggesting here that if you walk in forward, that's what the Torah restricts in terms of becoming tamei. You go into a bayit amnuga, means you have a house that is deemed to have tzorat. The house is like an oel amet that has the same din. And the person who enters there is going to come tamei. The person who comes tamei, the Torah frames that as a ba el abayit, someone who comes into the house. The normal way you walk into the house is that you enter nose first, by your face first. You enter derech bi'ah, then once the robe of your body's in there, we say rubo kukulo, and we deem you as if you are inside of the house. We don't say that when you enter in backwards, and that's the main issue that Rav Hoshaya is pointing out over here. If you go in backwards to the house, now you're not doing it the normal way that people enter into the house. So now, if the person is entirely in the house, with the exception of his nose, he's not in the house, and therefore he should not become tamei. So that's his suggestion over here. Now, you could ask, which is, we have a principle, bia b'mitzvah shmei bia, that someone who comes in partially is considered to be fully in that location. So the answer to that question is, Rav Hoshaya himself is of the opinion that bia b'mitzvah lo shmei bia, that if you come in partially, it's not considered to be a bia. And so over here, just because the robe of your body is in the house is not enough. So even though you have your entire body besides your nose in there, that's going to protect you according to Rabbi Ochaya. Could even argue, according to those that say, bia v'mitzvah shmei bia, that's only with regards to the azara. That principle might be true, or those that believe it's true might be with entering into the Kodesh, or entering into the Mikdash. That may not be true in Beit HaMinugah. So you could differentiate and say, even according to those that say, bia v'mitzvah shmei bia, that's by Kodesh, that's by the azara, not over here. So for that reason, he wants to say that you're not going to be tamei. But he says, umistafina mechabraya, what is it that he's afraid of, that his friends are going to challenge him on, is, yachei kulei nami. If that's the case, then, even if he enters entirely into the house, why should he be tamei? It's not derech biyah. The Torah says you're only chayav derech biyah, then that qualification should last, even when your entire body is in the house. If that is the trigger for you becoming tamei, then if you walk in forward, you become tamei. You walk in backwards, you don't become tamei. But he said you still have to have your nose outside the house. What happens if your entire body's in the house? You still didn't qualify because you weren't Habala Bait. You didn't go in Derech Biyah. So he says, that's what I'm afraid of. They're going to challenge me about. Amarava, Kulo Lo Gora Mikelim Shiba Bait. So he says, wait a minute. I don't see that as a challenge because there you're no different than an inanimate object that is in the house. Yichtiv, this is pre the Kohen declaring the house Tamei. It says, you have to empty out the house. Why do you empty out the house? Because once the Kohen declares it Tamei, everything in the house becomes Tamei. So we tell you, get your Kelim out beforehand. That tells you that any object that is found in the house becomes Tamei, irrespective of how they got there. These items were in there beforehand. They didn't go into the house. They are there. And they become Tamei. It's a separate din. There's one din of Derech Bi'ah. So that's one din. There's another din that when you're in the house, you become Tamei. And so you can make that distinction. You're right. When your nose is still outside the house, when you walked in backwards, you're not Tamei. Ah, when you got inside the house, you didn't come in Derech Bi'ah. Irrelevant now. You're in the house. Once you're in the house, then you're going to become Tamei for being in the house itself, like the Kelim. Tanya Nami Ochi, we have a Braita that supports that. Gagim alalu, enochlim sham kodshe kodoshim, vein shochatim sham kodshim kalim. So this is a support for this view that Derech Bi'ah matters. And that is that when it comes to the Mikdash, the first level is Kadosh, the Aliyot are Kadosh, but the Gagim, the roofs of the buildings that are found in the Azara, do not have Kedusha. So now, if they don't have Kedusha, that has implications for the following matters. Number one is, Ein ochlim sham kodshei kodeshim. There's a requirement that kodshei kodeshim be eaten in the Azara. If you're eating on the roof of one of the structures in the Azara, you're not in the Azara, and you can't eat the Kodshim Kodeshim there. Kodshim Kalim have to be shechted in the Azara. Irrespective of where in the Azara, they just need to be shechted in the Azara. There are some limitations, and that's we'll get to in the Gemara in Zvachim, which will set up a multi-level machloket as to how far you can go inside the Azara to shech, but at least you can do it anywhere in the Azara. Again here, if you're on the roof of one of the structures, you can't shech there, that's not being in the Azara. The last thing is, if you enter the Azara through one of these rules, it's not classified as entering into the Mikdash. Because, Shenemar Bela Mikdash Lo Tabo, Derech Bi'ah Asra Torah. The Torah says that Derech Bi'ah is problematic, and if you didn't come in Derech Bi'ah, you're not going to be Chayav. Over here, it's interesting only because it seems from the formulation of the Braita that you would not be Chayav at all. Even after you entered into the Mikdash, and you were there, you would not be chayav. The answer to that is, if you don't come in derech bi'ah, you're not chayav immediately. Then you're subject to the rules of today shihiyah. So that might be what the Braita is saying, is that you're patur, because now you've entered the mikdash, your mere entry is not a problem. Now you're faced with a question of when you're tamei in the mikdash, what do you have to do? And that enters us into the world that we just discussed now. How fast do you need to exit in order not to be chayav? That's likely what the Braita is saying. But the Braita corroborates this idea that there is a Derech Bi'ah. Just interesting to note over here, the Balei Tosafot say, if you walk out backwards from the Azara, do we consider that to be not Derech Bi'ah, or not Derech Yitziah? And he makes an interesting point. He says, If you walk out backwards, that's considered to be walking out. If you say Derech Bi'ah means walking in face first, then walking out should be walking out face first as well. The Balei Tosafot note that there is a big difference. That is, when you part from the king, or you walk away from someone of significance, many people turn around and bow and walk out backwards. Like when you leave the shul, you leave a place of Makom Kadosh, you turn around and you give reverence to the person, place, and you back out backwards. So he says that when you're exiting, going out backwards is Derech Bi'ah, or is the normal way to walk. Whether you walk out with your back to the person, and you walk out face first, or you walk out back first, both of those are considered to be Derech Yitziah, because it's like a Talmid and Niftar Mirabo. Alright, so now, in the middle of the Mishnah, it entered what seemed to be a non sequitur. It says, oh, this is a mitzvah to stage Mikdash, ain't chayvin aleh. But where did that come from? That came out of left field in the middle of the Mishnah, and it has really nothing to do with our topic. So that's what Gemar says. Heichi koi, where is the head of this Tana, the Gamar Zohi? This is. This is implies that you have some information beforehand, and then this is a continuation of a statement. In our Mishnah, it's clearly not that way, because the Zohi pops out of the middle of nowhere. So he says, Hotam Kai. He's in the Mishnah in Horiot. The Mishnah in Horiot is describing the restrictions or violations for which Beitin would have to bring a Par Helam Davar Shel Tzibor. The Beit Din gives a psak halacha. We'll get to Ariot about all the qualifications and what they have to do. And the Rov HaTzibur follows this mistaken psak of the Beit Din. Then they have to bring what's called a Par Helam Dover Shel Tzibur. One of the qualifications for the Par Helam Dover Shel Tzibur, which will become obvious now when we read this, is that it has to be in an Avera, which if you did be Mezid, you'd be Chayav, Karet, or Mita. And Bishogeg, you would bring a Chatat Kavua. You bring a fixed Chatat. So the failure in our Mishnah for the violation is that a violation of Shogeg in our Mishnah for Tumat Mikdash for Kodeshav is subject to Korban Oleh V'Yorei. And that's what the Gemara now is saying. That's what our Mishnah is clipped from. It's clipped from that statement in Horiot, which was in the middle of the Mishnah Horiot. It's saying, these are what your Chayav Parlam Davar Tzibur. And then it speaks about Tumat Mikdash for Kodeshav. This is something that would not qualify. As opposed to, as our mission says, Nida, that would qualify. So Nida and the Migdash have the same din. A din where which, if you became Tamei Be'ones, nevertheless you now have a requirement to do something or act in a certain way. So in the Migdash you have to leave as fast as possible, but in the Nida you have to wait in order to remove oneself. Those are similar in nature, but one of them would be subject to Parlam Davar Shel Tzibur and one would not. And that is that Nida, which is subject to a Chatat Kavua B'Shogeg, would be subject to a Parlam Davar Shel Tzibur, whereas our case of Tumat Mikdash Kodeshav, which is subject to Korban Oleh V'Yorei, Bishogeg, would not be subject to a Parlam Davar Shel Tzibur. And that's what the Gemara says now. Ein chayavin al asei velo lo tasei shem mikdash. You're not chayav on a positive or negative violation in the Mikdash. Vein mivin hasham toloi al asei velo tasei shem mikdash. And similarly, just like you won't bring a Parlam Davar Shel Tzibur, you won't bring an Hashem Taloi. Hashem Taloi is a korban that is brought by individuals who have a safek, whether they violated an isur that would bring a chatat kavua, and so now they don't know. So they bring the Hashem Taloi to protect them until they do know and bring a chatat kavua. That we spoke about it before, but in terms of Yom HaKippurim, maybe eliminating the need for an Hashem Taloi. So that Hashem Taloi is also governed by a chatat kavua, and if you have tumat mikdash for kodeshav, which is a korban olevi yorei, do not give me chayav in Hashem Taloi. Aval, chayavin al asev al otase shebinida, umivin Hashem Taloi al asev al otase shebinida. So that is the contrast between tumat mikdash for kodeshav to nida. By nida, you would have an Hashem Taloi, you would have parlam davar shel tzibur. That's not true by our case over here. Vikamar. And this is where our Mishnah is drawn from. Our Mishnah is clipping out in the middle of this. Zohi mitzvah asish mikdash in chayvin alea. Our Mishnah gives the example of that case, and then it says Zohi. That's the one. When we were talking about Horiot, you wanted to know that one where you're not chayav? This is it. This is the one here. Vezohi mitzvah asish mikdash in chayvin alea. What is the case by nida where you are chayav? Vayamishamesh ima Torah. Vamra lo nitmeti. Uperesh miyad chayav. Mipnesh yitziyato hanalo kebiyato. That's a continuation of our Mishnah. That if she declares herself tameah while he is in the middle of the biyah, then he's not allowed to exit immediately. He has to wait in order for the erection to subsist, and then he can leave. If he doesn't do that, he's going to be chayav korban chatat for the violation of nida. Now, in terms of the asay and lot asay here, many of the Mishnayim point out that a korban is not brought over a violation of an asay. It's only brought on a violation of a lot asay. And so why is the Gemara mentioning asei velot asei shemikdash, asei velot asei shebinida? So you can read it in one of two ways. You can either read it that simply, it happens to be true, that by tumat mikdash v'kodeshav, you have an asei and a lot asei that you violate, at least according to the Baal Tosfot and the Ramban, Rashi thinks you're only in violation of the asei if you become tamei in the mikdash, and then that's why the Gemara was searching for a lav for when you are inside, and then you could get malkot or b'chayev a korban. Whereas the Tosafot and the Ramban believe that there is a lota say, lo yitamon machaneim applies even when you become tamei internally. So there you have an asei lota say, and by nida you have the same thing, which is, veli shabi nida tumata lo tikrav legolot ervata, that you are not allowed to become close, and then you also have to distance yourself from such tuma. So there again you have an asei and a lota say, and that's just simply telling you that the nature of the mitzvot are the same. They both have an asay and lot asay, but it's not that the asay itself would make you chayav a korban. It's not that the asay would make you chayav for parlam davar shel tzibur. But there are others who suggest that maybe there an asay in precipitated isur asay, there is an isur involved here as well. And that maybe that isur would suffice to be mechayev you in these cases. Right? Itmar. Abaye mar mishmei de rabchiya barav. Chayav shtai. The person who does this is chayav two. Chayav marav amar shmo bar shva. Amar Rav Huna, Chayav Shtayim. He's now Chayav two korbanot. This is the case of Nida, in an instance where she declares herself Tmeah in the middle of the intercourse. He's Chayav twice. Chadak Nisa, Chadak Risha. One for being Boel and Nida in the first place, and one for then separating away from the Nida, well, when she became a Nida already. Havi Ba Rabo, whether it's Rabo or Rovo, questioned or queried about this, but my, what is the scenario in which she's going to be Chayav to Korbanot Mishogeg? Iloima Samuch Levesda. If it is very close to the time period where she normally has her sighting, Veset is a fixed cycle that the Mishnayot and Gemara Nida speak about. So Samuch Levesta means this is the time that the woman would expect to menstruate. And so we generally say a person should separate away from their wife in the Ona, that is prior to Vesta, in the time period that leads up to that normal time when she would see it. We separate in order not to take any risk. And there is a requirement, Midoraita, to do that, which is Lotikrav Ligalot Ervata. Don't get close to violating the Isra of Nida. And that means you got to separate preemptively in order to avoid the problem. Obiman. So then who are we speaking about? Ileimah B'Talmud Chocham. If we're speaking about a Talmud Chocham, Bishlama Knisa L'Chayev. So then he should be Chayav on the Knisa, because he did it b'shogeg. I'll explain this in 1 minute, why it's a shogeg. Kasara yechomle liv'ol. He says, I thought I could make it in time. Ela pisha amai lechayev. Why should he be chayev a korban b'shogeg on separating from the woman? Mezidu. He knows the halacha. The idea of a tamar chokham is he's aware of the halacha. Knowledge makes you into a mezid. Right? We even have an opinion in the Gemara and Sanhedrin that hatra'ah is only there to change you from a shogeg to a mezid. And therefore, they believe that Tamar Chochem doesn't need Hatra'ah because he knows the information. So if he knows the information over here, he's deemed to be a Mezid in terms of the Hafrashah, pulling out right away, he knew better. He shouldn't have done it. If he does it, he's doing it intentionally. What about when he is Bo'el the Nida? Why is he considered to be intentional over there? So Rashi explains over here that he sits somewhere between Ones and Mezid. He's not an Ones because it was Samach Levesta. He should have expected the fact that she might become a Nida because it was in the window or parameters in which she becomes a Nida. Samuch Levesta, he should have been more careful. So you can't call him an Ones for that. On the other hand, you can't call him a Mezid. He's not intentionally being Boel a Nida because of the fact that she's not a Nida yet. So it's not called a Mezid. He thought he had enough time to do it before she became a Nida. That's a classic case of Shogeg. You didn't think through the situation carefully. You didn't look at all the ramifications. And so you made an assumption that led you to do this unintentionally, but you could have been more careful. You should have been more careful. So you might be in violation of the Isra Ve'le'isha b'dinat tumata lo tikrav legalot ervata, whether it's the right or the Rabbanan, you might be in violation of that. But as far as being chayav b'mezid, you're clearly a shogeg over here, and you can be chayav a korban. But that only leads you to one korban, not two korbanot. So v'iba maretz, so what are you going to say? It's a person that doesn't know. Idi v'idi, Achal shnei zeitei chelev behelam echad hu. Both of the violations here are similar to a person who eats two kezeitim, olives worth of fat that is asur, that there you only bring one korban. In order to bring a different korban for a violation, you need what's called a yediyah bentayim. You have to be made aware of the problem in the interim. So if a person eats chelev and then they find out or know that they did it, and then they eat chelev again unintentionally, you have to bring two korbanot. The other hand, a person eats chelev unintentionally, then never knows about it, and then eats again unintentionally, that's considered to be one halama, or one connection for the korban. And similar over here, this Am Haaretz, he's in violation of Boel Nida. The Boel Nida violation is both B'Knisa and B'Yitziya, but there was no Yediyah B'Tayim, he doesn't know in between, he doesn't figure out in between that he did something wrong, therefore you're in a situation where he's only going to be chayav one korban, even though there are two violations over here. Ella, b'shein samuch levesta. So what are you going to suggest now? It wasn't in the period of time close to her normal menstruating time. Ubeman, again, who are we speaking about? Ilema b'tamid chokam, if we're dealing with the tamid chokam, v'lo chada lo mechayiv. He shouldn't be chayav anything over here. Akinisanus, the fact that he was boel in the first place is a complete donis. What did he do wrong over here? She wasn't expected to be a nida. It's in a period of time that she's normally tehora. So why should there be any problem? The fact that he was boel her was not problematic, and therefore you should be chayav at all. Aprisha Mezid. And the taking it out, he's a Mezid. He knows she's not allowed to do that. He's a Mezid. She's not chayv any korban now. Knisa is ones, and on the Yitziah, he's a Mezid. Iba Maretz, Chadu de Mechayev, Aprisha Hadar. Beitzanam Aretz, again, the Knisa, he is an ones, because it wasn't Samuch Levesta. On the Prisha, he is a Shogeg. He doesn't know the halacha. And therefore, he's Omer Mutar, or whatever he says here. And therefore, he is Chayav Korban. But that's one Korban, not two Korbanot. So Marova, the Olam, B'samuch Levesta, B'tamun Chacham. The case here is a case where it was close to when we expected her to menstruate. And it's a Tamar Chacham that is being Boel. B'tamun Chacham Lezo, Vein Tamar Chacham Lezo. He knows that you're not supposed to be Boel, a woman, Samuch Levesta. But he doesn't know the halacha that you're not allowed to be poresh from the nida when you have an aver that is still erect. You need to wait for it to be an aver mate to separate. He doesn't know that halacha. So he is somewhat knowledgeable, but not fully knowledgeable. Let's call him someone between a Talmud Chacham and an Amaretz. He knows that you're not supposed to get together with the wife, Samuch Levesta. He did that anyway. He's a shogeg because he thought he could do it in a permissible manner. He failed to do it, and therefore he's going to be chayav a korban. On the way out, he doesn't know that that's problematic. Now, he should have known, or he should have had that information, or his omer mutar, and that's deemed to be a shogeg. And since it's a shogeg on the way out, now that's how you get two korbanot. He's going to be shogeg for boel nida b'knisa. He's going to be a korban for boel nida b'yitziyah. And there is a yediyah bentayim. Because here's someone who knows that if she is a nida, that something happened, something went wrong. Which is that he started to be boeler with samuch levesta, and she says tameani. He tells him that she is a nida. So now he knows when he went in, it was a problem. That he did something wrong already. So now you have a diab ben tayim that will separate between these two violations, and that's why he's going to be chayav two korbanot bishogeg in this situation. That's how we explain that statement of the Amoraim before, that a boel nida in this circumstance is going to be chayav two korbanot for violating knisa and yitziyah of Helichot Nida. Okay, we're going to stop here, 8 lines down on the top of Yud Chet Amud Aleph.